Take me to the place in the middle of the sun.
What's going on, guys?
Welcome to I Do Podcast, where we interview the world's leading relationship, marriage, dating, and self-help experts. Whether you're single, dating, married, or struggling in a relationship, you're in the right place. We're here to help give you the tools to succeed.
And on today's episode, we welcome Dr. Alexandra Solomon. And Dr. Solomon is a licensed clinical psychologist at the Family Institute at Northwestern University and a clinical assistant professor also at Northwestern. And her most recent book is called Loving Bravely. And one thing that we talk about in the episode and that I love is that she actually teaches a course called Building Loving and Lasting Relationships, Marriage 101 at Northwestern. And if there's ever a course, if you're a college student that you want to take to succeed, I would say that is it. And she says that it is one of, if not the most popular course at the school, which is great to hear. In today's show, we talk about how to improve yourself to improve the relationship. And a lot of the things we talk about are things that she goes over in that college course that her kids love so much. So a ton of valuable insight that has been proven. I think the course is in its 17th or 19th year, she said. So, and it's the most popular one there. And it's just so much great stuff that you'll be able to apply to yourself that will help improve your relationship. So if you're listening with your partner, great. If you're not, you're still going to be able to bring this stuff and help improve the relationship. So even if you are in a good and happy place, there are certainly things that you can take. And if you're not, or if you're single, there's going to be some great advice.
We hope you guys enjoy the episode. Support for I Do Podcast comes from Talkspace, the online therapy company that believes that therapy should be affordable, confidential, and convenient. Join over 500,000 people who have used Talkspace for online therapy with their licensed therapist. Get $30 off your first month by visiting Talkspace.com/I Do. That's one word, I-D-O. That's Talkspace.com/I Do. Hi, Dr. Solomon. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, you guys. Great to be here with you.
So we've given our listeners just a little overview. Why don't you take a minute, tell us about yourself and why you enjoy helping people improve their relationship?
Sure. Well, I've been at this for a lot of years now. Pretty early in graduate school, I realized that I was really passionate about figuring out what it takes to make love flourish. And a number of different facets of my life kind of feed that passion of mine. So when I'm working in my therapy office and working with individuals and couples, helping them unlock what's holding them back and be, bold and open and curious in their romantic relationships. In my classroom, I teach an undergraduate class called Building Loving and Lasting Relationships, Marriage 101. And that's all we do. We just kind of dive right in and understand, explore and better understand what it takes to make love work. I train graduate students to be couples therapists. I do a lot of work with the media and presenting on these topics. And as you know, just published a book that's really designed to be a deep dive into oneself in order to kind of heal, grow, open, expand yourself so you can bring your most wholehearted self to your romantic relationships.
Love that. And we are going to zero in on that topic for today. But first, I got to ask, your course at school, it's so interesting because I'm unfortunately a long way out of college, even though I still feel like I'm 20. But I just imagine that course being offered in school and not diving at the opportunity to learn about marriage and but I think it's great. And I think that's what we love to do here on the podcast is give people the tools to succeed. So kind of could you just talk about that course and how it's received by the younger students, college age students?
Sure. Oh my gosh. We have so much fun. It's, we're actually just about to get rolling here. It's a spring quarter, course. So we're just kind of laying the groundwork and getting ready to rock and roll with it. But this year, it's going to be the 17th year that we've taught the class. And, at this point it is, well, for a number of years, it's really been the most popular course on campus. We fill up, very, very, very quickly and have a long wait list. And, we try to pack as many students into the classroom as we can, because it is, as you're saying, it's a pretty unique opportunity to have at college. And college, you know, that chapter of our life, I mean, I think as human beings, we're always curious about love, but I think there's something about being a college student where those issues of intimacy and who am I and what do I want in love are so ripe for exploration. They're so important and so in the foreground. So to have a class where they can use their brains and study the research and study all of what we know scientifically and from lots and lots of, you know, hours of therapy, what we know makes a relationship work, it's really a neat opportunity. And there's, I always say the class sits at the intersection of academic and experiential learning, because they're doing traditional things like writing papers and taking quizzes and reading research, but they're also doing experiential learning in these small breakout groups. So we meet as a big group in a lecture hall, and I give lectures, and other colleagues of mine come in and give lectures. And then we also break up into small groups, and in the small group, they're really applying that material to their own lives and their own stories, and kind of growing what I call relational self-awareness. So growing themselves, and that's a really powerful tool of growth to sit with classmates and all of my graduate assistants are all graduate students who are training to be marriage and family therapists. So they're well suited to kind of help young adults better understand who they are and what they want for their lives.
I think almost every student should be required to take that class.
It was really cute. Yeah. At the end of the quarter, you know, they fill out evaluations. And last year, one of my students wrote my favorite comment ever. It was like, if you want to love, or if you are a human who likes humans, you should take this class. Like, basically, I don't know why you wouldn't take this class. And
that's awesome. Sweet. Well, that I want to take it. I got to go back to school now.
Well, you guys are welcome to sit in. If you're ever in Chicago, you're welcome to come and sit in.
It's super interesting, and it's awesome that's so well received. It's great to hear, because we have the podcast and we give this advice. And I even said I was projecting what I thought I would do as a college student, but now after hearing it and that there are people that are trying to be proactive. We love our listeners. We have more and more every week, just 10,000 downloads in one episode in the last week. That's 10,000 people getting great information from people like yourself. So today, let's go ahead and zero in and talk about, we mentioned it before, improving our own emotional and psychological well-being to help improve our relationships. So what, to start us off, what is maybe the primary problem that people have with not being in a good place emotionally and how that's affecting their relationships?
Yeah. Well, I just kind of going back to what you were saying, I think that as a culture, we're really obsessed with love, but we are not nearly as obsessed with doing what it takes to make love really work. And so, you know, what you guys are doing is so important, and I really value having these kinds of conversations. And that to me is the heart of what needs to happen, which is making the time and space to really look within and understand, okay, who am I and what am I bringing to the table? And to me, the most important factor that kind of is the foundation for everything else is being ready, willing, and able to look at how all of the experiences in our lives, most often the experiences we have in our families growing up, lay the foundation for who we are, what we believe, what we want, and how we act in love. And so I feel like most often the work that I'm doing is helping people look at, what did you learn in your family growing up? And what are those elements of what you learned in your sort of original love classroom? What do you want to bring with you and carry forward into your romantic relationships? And what do you want to leave behind? Because the past is always with us. The only question is, are we going to be brave enough to really look at how the patterns that we grew up with repeat themselves in our adult lives. And if we can be brave enough to look at those patterns, we can then choose what we want to continue and carry forward, and then transform and release and let go of what doesn't serve us.
And obviously, that's such a detailed process, and there's a lot of things that go on that would require a whole class, a whole course like you teach. But for our listeners, is there an exercise they can do to examine their past and become aware of these things and how they're affecting their relationship?
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's sort of the heart of the class I teach, and certainly of the book that I just wrote. I think that a place to start is looking at, what did you learn in your family growing up about how to handle conflict and how to handle closeness? Because if you think about it, basically being in love with somebody is a constant dance of closeness and conflict, and closeness and conflict. And both of those are woven into a relationship, right? We think that a relationship is all about kind of like feeling good and getting along, and it certainly is. But those misses and the conflict and the hurt feelings and the disappointment are also a part of love. And so what did you learn growing up about how to handle those moments of disconnect, of difference, of struggle? What did you learn about that in your house? I think that's a really great place to start. It's just like, what were the messages you were given about conflict and closeness?
And that's the first step, is understanding it. And once we can kind of get that perspective, how do we take the steps forward to move positively in a good direction in our relationship?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. In the book, we call it sort of like a name, connect, choose process. And so the first thing is naming, and nothing can change until it gets named. And I think also it's a little easy for us to underestimate the power of naming something. You know, once it's been named, that means we're bringing it into our conscious awareness. We're claiming it either as a problem or a strength or an asset. And so that kind of like insight is a really big, like really big piece of the puzzle right there. And then the rest of it is just practicing. The rest of it's practicing. So if I know that in my family, I learned that if there's a problem or a conflict, what we do is pick up the corner of the rug and just sweep it under and leave it there and not talk about it. If that's what I learned growing up, and I'm naming that as my pattern and my tendency, then in my own relationship, is if there's a problem, if I can name and be honest about the fact that I am at risk of sweeping a problem under the rug, now I can challenge myself and say, okay, I know that my knee-jerk reaction is to look the other way and just try to make nice, ignore it. I know that's my knee-jerk reaction, but what do I need to do instead? How can I be brave? How can I be brave and take a step forward? Because I know, you know, whatever I've learned about when I put something under the rug, my husband, my partner feels X. If I can get really wise about knowing that I have a tendency in this direction, and here's the negative impact it has on my partner, that can help me kind of hold myself accountable and be brave enough to start the process of doing it a different way.
That's a great specific example. Now, my question is, if we're in a relationship, shouldn't we be sharing these things? Like, we're examining ourselves, but at the same time, are we sort of walking through this with our partner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that is definitely, there's a piece of it that's about our own self-awareness, for sure. And that's really important. But there's a piece of it also, which is about working with our partner around how my tender spots and your tender spots fit together. I was working with a couple this morning, in fact, and we were working on kind of their core issue, which is that his primary love language is verbal affirmation. He craves and longs for verbal affirmation from his wife. Okay, this is like a long-standing pattern throughout their marriage. And he is partnered with a woman who really struggles with that. She didn't learn it in her family growing up. She doesn't understand this whole idea. To her, verbal praise is like patronizing. It's uncomfortable. So they have this whole dance they've been doing for many years where the very thing that he wants and needs is the very thing that she struggles to give. And they had a moment today where she was like, maybe we shouldn't be together. And I was like, oh, honey, every couple I work with, that's the way that it goes. Like, my wounds and your wounds fit together like a lock and a key. I think we're drawn to people who challenge us to break through old patterns and do it differently. So she's being really challenged in this marriage to soften, open, be more verbal and vulnerable with her praise and her love. And he's being challenged to figure out how to ask for what he needs, kind of soothe himself. So it's in that way a very perfect fit. But there's a part of it that's his work, a part of it's her work, and a part of it that's their work. And that's how it always is. It's always my stuff, your stuff, and our stuff.
It's easy to take the easy way out, like how she said, maybe we're not fit. And I think that's why relationships, it's hard work. And we might be a lot of times attracted to someone that makes us work harder. Like you said, like they bring out that quality that is almost opposite of what we're seeking. And it's so interesting. I mean, isn't that kind of, relationships are so complex, but it's almost what it comes down to is I love the analogy, like the dance. Mm-hmm. And navigating it, that dance. And I say a lot of times with all the advice that we get, there's not necessarily, and I'm sure when you work with people, there's not one wrong or right way to do things or to tackle conflict. But the more tools you have and the more you are aware of yourself, aware of your past and how it's made you into who you are, the better you're going to be able to address the problems and to navigate them. It's not that we're trying to prevent conflict altogether, because that does not exist. A relationship with zero conflict, there's going to be some level of cooperation, and navigating that is such a difficult, but it can be beautiful dance.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the big parts of my job is to train graduate students to be couples therapists. And I think when you're beginning as a couples therapist, what you want is like a really well-organized toolbox, so that when your couple comes in, you can use this tool and then this tool and this tool and this tool, and then you have them feeling better and out your door in, you know, 8 sessions flat. And I think there are certainly tools and skills and communication kinds of assignments that couples can do that are very helpful. But I think one of the most powerful things about couples therapy and about this kind of personal growth work that you are inviting and challenging your listeners to do is one of the greatest tools we can have is just growing our resilience and our ability to tolerate complexity and shift from a mindset of we have to fix this and reduce the conflict to get back to a place of being quote unquote okay. And instead, really work on just being able to kind of vibe with and flow with and stay with how incredibly complicated love is. I think about love sometimes as like looking at us and laughing like, oh, okay, you think that it's going to be really neat and tidy and you can organize it and put it into boxes and create rules and boundaries. And love is like, that's not how I do it. I mean, love is complicated and unruly and disorganized and messy. So in that way, our best tool is just our own resilience and ability to kind of stay with all of that mess and kind of appreciate it.
It's so true. And the better we know ourselves, the more we're going to be able to learn these tools. And if you're just coming from a place that you're not taking the time to look within, it's, you're almost just blind to more than half of the equation. Is there one particular tool? I know you just mentioned a few, but is there one that just stands out as making the most difference besides the self-introspection? Is there another tool that can make a huge difference in improving our relationships?
I think couples really benefit from taking a stance of being curious about each other and being invested and interested in learning more about each other, because it's a way. So if we think about introspection, as something that grows self-awareness and helps us understand, oh, my knee-jerk reaction is going to be this, so let me do this instead. The tool of being curious about our partner is a tool that keeps empathy flowing in a relationship. So if I can stay really curious about my partner and who he is and where his patterns come from and what he was like as a little boy and how his childhood shaped his tendencies and created tender spots for him, the more I can be curious about that, the less reactive I'll be and the less I'll want to and need to change him or quote unquote fix him. And the more I can just kind of appreciate him as his own complicated person. You know, I think when we're in one of those like sort of stuff hits the fan moments in our relationship, what we want is the other guy to change just to make the discomfort go away, you know, like just be different. Because if you could just be different in this moment, it wouldn't be so painful. So if we can make it a practice to stay in a curious stance about like, wait, tell me, how do you see the world and how do you see that? And what's it like for you to have a, you know, this little baby that's having, you know, we can't kind of get her to quiet down. How is that for you? And why does it feel like that for you and like this for me? Kind of just being really curious about how you each see the world in slightly different ways, even though, you know, you're very connected.
And it really just, like you said, it all kind of comes back to just being almost aware of yourself and how you kind of react in that situation. Like a conflict situation. So I think that's a great example.
One of my grad students a couple of years ago told the story that just like so crystallizes for me. So she and her husband live in this sort of, you know, typically small Chicago apartment. And he wanted to have like floor to ceiling paper towel. Like in his mind, that was what you did. You like go to Costco, you buy all the paper towel you can possibly fit into your apartment. And that's how it has to be. And she was so irritated by this and so annoyed. Like in her mind, needed like maybe a couple of extra rolls, but basically like you could go to the store if you needed more and, you know, get more. So it was a source of conflict and tension. And she wanted to change him, right? Like she wanted him to see it the way she saw it. And somehow in one of these conversations, it came to light that he grew up as a little boy in an Eastern European country where they had nothing. They grew up in extreme poverty. They had very little to get their needs met, and everything felt very unsafe and insecure. And so for him now, as a grown man in the U.S., in, you know, Chicago, living with his wife, to him, that floor-to-ceiling paper towel just symbolized, we're going to be okay. We have a safety net under us. We have a little cushion. And it soothed that little boy part of him, you know, that grew up afraid of where, of you know, not being able to kind of have enough. And so then she just let go of the struggle. And then she could look at that paper towel and just feel a sense of pride that, in fact, this was a symbol of the two of them taking care of themselves and each other. And she knew if the little boy part of him felt soothed and okay, that that was kind of enough for her. It helped her let go of the desire to make him different.
I love that story. And our listeners are probably thinking of a time that they had a silly argument over paper towels or something, and maybe we had another guest. I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was a very similar story that one thing that the partner was doing is something about taking out the trash, and it just really annoyed the other partner for years and years and years. And then it turned out that there was a deep rooted meaning in what was going on, with what seemed like a trivial or silly thing about taking out the trash. And if you take the time to ask the questions, you'll get to the root of the cause, and then it turns into a beautiful thing that the other, you know, you don't have to fill up the living room with paper towels maybe, but you can you can understand, you can compromise, but you understand that we're complex beings, and that just shows it. It's like it on the surface it's the paper towels, but it's such a much more deep rooted thing going on. I love that story.
Yeah, I do too. It really stayed with me when she was, it was like an aha moment for her in the classroom to be like, oh, okay, I understand now how that whole story that we went through fits with this, whatever it was that I was teaching at that moment. It was really, yeah, it was neat.
Right. And so what's the best way that can come out? Is that someone looking at their past, but I almost feel like it's so hard to be introspective. And if we're 30 something years old and we got this thing with paper towels and we don't really understand why without someone prodding us. And is that maybe when the partner asking those questions is so valuable?
Well, yeah, I love that. Right. A partner who's willing to ask a curious question about, can you help me understand what the meaning is of this for you? Cause I genuinely, legitimately, I'm confused. Help me understand it. But I would just say, I mean, I would just put a plug out there for couples therapy as a really, really powerful tool. My heart breaks when a couple comes into my office and they're in the 11th hour, you know, and they already have looked for a divorce attorney and they're just here to see me as like a one last ditch effort. I really wish that we could shift the culture to be one in which couples make ample use of couples therapy. And we spend so much money and time on all kinds of lessons and coaches and consultants. And it seems like couples therapy all too often is the last tool that anybody wants to use. And people wait, in my mind, people wait far too long to reach out and ask for it. I mean, couples, people who are really well trained to do really good couples therapy can make a powerful difference in the lives of people. And then we think about like the lives of them, the children that they raise and the children, you know, that they raise. Like I think it's such an admirable thing to do, to say, I love you so much and I love us so much that I want us to take the time and invest the money in better understanding our patterns and where they come from and how we can best serve each other in this relationship.
Relationships, whether they're romantic or with our family or friends, they're the most important things in our lives. And like you said, it is so interesting from a cultural level how we don't put nearly as much emphasis and time into improving them. But people like yourselves having the books and certainly the class, and then we are not experts by any means, but we enjoy having the podcast so we can put this information out there. And I know it's helped our relationship so much, and you kind of hinted on it. It doesn't need to be something that's only looked at when there's problems. You want to, when you're as happy as a clam in your relationship, that's when you should still be getting these tools, because when something does happen, you'll be able to tackle it in the best way possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yep. And also, sometimes we talk about a dose-based approach, like doing a dose of therapy, you know, as you're making the decision to live together or get married, another dose around the birth of your first baby, another dose as you've got, you know, whatever, kids in elementary school. Certainly when you've got teenagers, another great time for couples therapy. So sort of seeing it in a developmental lens, it's, you know, I think my husband and I are now in our 19th year of marriage, and we've got an adolescent and a pre-adolescent. And what the demands on each of us and on our marriage are really different than, you know, just a few years ago when we were in the stage that you guys are in with a little, you know, little baby. And it's such a dynamic, being in a marriage is such a dynamic kind of a thing, you know, and expectations change and the demands change. And so just kind of keeping it in mind as a long-term tool that, okay, so we've never parented a 14-year-old. Let's figure out what that brings up in each of us and how we best rise to the occasion.
And during those dose-based sessions, are they, what do you talk about exactly? Like how to deal with the upcoming conflict or the potential of conflict?
Yeah, I think that is definitely. I mean, I think yes. And finding ways to, sometimes it's having difficult conversations that are hard to have at home because tensions would start to run high. So having conversations in a place where you've got somebody there to keep the space safe. That's sometimes how my couples will use therapy. They'll say, you know, we had this issue and we didn't want to talk about it till we were in here with you. But I have couples who kind of come in and out of therapy with me over time.
Doing something is better than doing nothing. It's not going to be perfect. Even just listening to this podcast and hopefully then taking the steps to implement some of these tools. And even if you're not doing that with your partner, at least you're hopefully internalizing them yourself and you're taking that forward. even if you're single, because when you do get into a relationship, you're going to have these tools for success.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe even especially when you're single, because then it helps you really know if you're bringing somebody in who can really partner with you. You know, I think one of the things with online, so it's really normal and normative to use online dating tools, and certainly physical attraction and how somebody looks is an element. I would never say it's not an element of it. But to me, the most important thing I would want people to be looking for in a partner is just this, like the willingness to look inside themselves, to be introspective, to be curious, to kind of own their stuff, to be open to looking at how the past impacts the present. That to me is the most important quality to look for in a partner.
It's really important, and it's interesting because we've had conversations with past guests and we talk about when do you know that the relationship is not good and that maybe you should consider walking away. And one of the biggest, most common things is that the partner is not willing to work on the relationship, to work on themselves. So it's kind of the reverse of what you just said. You want to look for someone that's willing to be introspective and put in the work.
Yes. Yeah. I've definitely heard people say it. I don't believe in couples therapy. I think first of all, it's not like Santa Claus. Like, you don't really get to either believe in it or not believe in it. Like, it's there whether or not you're believing in it. But that's just, it sort of feels like it's a stance that feels confusing to me. Like, how could somebody not believe in couples therapy? And I guess what they're saying is I can never imagine a situation where I would bring that into my life. And to me, that just conveys a real lack of humility, because if there's anything that love will do, it's humble people, right? Like, you think you got your act together? Okay, fall in love and build a marriage and see how vulnerable that makes you feel. So, yeah.
They wouldn't, it seems like someone that's saying that is not being honest with themselves. They're not looking at it from a clear space and a clear lens. They're kind of deceiving themselves.
Mm-hmm. There's a kind of rigidity.
Right.
In that, I struggle with, for sure.
Well, this is all great information. Now we got to move forward to the lasting love round. But first, we want to tell you a little about our sponsor, Talkspace. Almost every guest we've had on the show has recommended talking with a therapist as one of the most effective ways to improve yourself and your relationship. And that's why we're excited to tell you more about Talkspace.
If you've ever thought about going to therapy, but found it too inconvenient, too expensive, or just too embarrassing to make it into an office, then give Talkspace a try. Talkspace is an online therapy company, and they make it easy to connect to a licensed therapist handpicked just for you for as little as $32 a week. Talkspace allows you to text, audio, and video message your therapist as much as you want.
Your Talkspace therapist can listen to you vent about work or family, explore your relationship, and help put you on the path to a happier life. To sign up or to learn more, go to Talkspace.com/I-do. That's one word, I-D-O. And as a special offer for our listeners, you can use coupon code I-do to get $30 off your first month and to show your support for this podcast. That's I-do and Talkspace.com/I-do. Talkspace, therapy for how we live today.
What is one tool or practice our listeners can use on a daily basis to help improve their relationship?
How about keeping a gratitude journal? So looking every day for what's going well, what am I grateful for, what is plentiful around me.
Is there a book or resource you can recommend for listeners who want to improve their relationships?
Do I get to say my own book?
Or is that just... Of course.
I definitely, Loving Bravely is the book that I just wrote. I've got so many books that I really love about love. I love Sue Johnson's Love Sense. I love all of the books by Brené Brown. Those are really beautiful books about the self. I love Ian Kerner's books about sex and the role of sex in a relationship. I've got a thick bookshelf of all kinds of books about love.
Great. Well, we'll be sure to add all those books as well as your book on your show notes page on idopodcast.com. We've been married for 2 years now. Is there any advice you'd give newlyweds?
The advice I would give newlyweds is to, it just sounds so trite, but just to make sure that each day you really let your partner know that, that you're glad to have them in your life. And that's as much a way of saying it to yourself, like saying to yourself, I'm really glad this person's in my life, as it is saying it to the other person, you know?
I love that. And you could do that even when, if you're not a newlywed, 19 years in.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
What advice would you give our single listeners looking for a happy relationship?
It really definitely would be to be working on yourself and knowing that when you fall in love and as you fall in love, it's really normal and natural. The analogy I always use is it's like shaking up a snow globe. You know, it's falling in love and building relationships shakes up a snow globe, and whatever stuff you thought you had worked out or figured out is going to kind of come back into play. So the degree to which you're comfortable and working, comfortable and aware of stuff that's in your past and tendencies that you have, then the better able you're going to be at handling the fact that love is going to stir all of that up.
I love that analogy. Thank you. Well, Dr. Solomon, we've enjoyed hearing all the advice you've given us and our listeners today. So let's wrap up by having you tell our listeners where they can find you, and then we'll say goodbye.
Sure. My website is dralexandrasolomon.com. I'm on Instagram at dr.alexandra.solomon and Facebook, Dr. Alexandra Solomon.
Our listeners can find all the information and links of today's episode on idopodcast.com. Go to the podcast tab and you'll be in the archives.
And again, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
It was great. Great to be with you guys.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you haven't done so already, head on over to our website, idopodcast.com, to check out this episode's show notes and to sign up for our newsletter.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.